It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the unexpected increases or spikes in drug-involved overdoses here in Wisconsin and the latest approaches in harm reduction as opioids continue to be the leading cause of overdose deaths. Bring your perspective to the conversation. Call in with a question, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Rachel Giculay is an epidemiologist and assistant professor at UW-Madison School of Nursing. Rachel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for having me this morning.
So Public Health Madison and Dane County recently issued an overdose spike alert. Help us understand what qualifies as a spike.
Sure, yeah. So the spike alert that you're speaking of was issued on May 24th. In this particular spike incident, they had detected more overdoses in the community than we would have expected based on prior data around this time of year last year and, you know, the prior weeks before May 24th. And so specifically, they had had 9 overdose or potential overdose incidents involving need for Narcan. Unfortunately, 2 of those people died from the suspected overdose. And because this was more than is typically seen in the local community, they issued a spike alert to let everyone know that there may be some changes in the drug supply and recommend, you know, some behavior changes or referral to resources that might be helpful to people.
So spike alerts, very much data-driven. Anything that is wavering from the baseline data you normally see?
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. So we have some spike alerts really are kind of from this idea that if we can speed up surveillance, we can take action quickly. The trade-off is that often we have to act on very preliminary data. So we're dealing with sort of suspected overdoses based on emergency medical responses, hospital data, police records. And those are all in Madison, at least, reported to Public Health Madison and Dane County. And then an epidemiologist there is able to review those, compare to prior data, and determine if we're seeing more than we would expect.
And you always want to find out the cause, why a recent overdose spike. Is there any inclination you know what is causing that in Dane County?
Well, I think broadly speaking, we have seen for several years that fentanyl, illicitly manufactured fentanyl specifically, has contaminated our drug supply. That's an opioid that's much, much more potent than heroin and sort of enters our drug supply in unpredictable amounts. So over time, there may be more or less fentanyl in our local drug supply. It's very hard to predict that. And so sometimes we see these indications through an increase in overdoses. So one cause is really just this kind of instability and variation in the amount of fentanyl in the drug supply. More recently, though, we've seen other really concerning trends where other drugs are entering the drug supply. One of them is called xylazine. And then as well, we've seen illicitly manufactured fentanyl not just entering the heroin supply, but also the cocaine and methamphetamine supplies in Wisconsin and nationwide. And so kind of all put together, this sort of instability and lack of predictability of the drug supply is really what can cause these spikes to occur. I will say for any particular event, it's very difficult in real time to have the data you would need to know what's going on because we don't necessarily have that real-time testing of the drug supply or that data available to public health to make these decisions.
Sometimes you might hear about a bad batch of drugs, and I use bad batch in air quotes, that terminology sometimes out there. It could that be because it fentanyl might be to blame there, or what might that mean as public health experts trying to trace back to get a clearer cause of the spike?
Yeah, for sure. So this idea that, you know, there's a bad batch circulating and it may be in our community for a week or two, That's definitely the idea behind the spikes. And again, like I said, those things can kind of vary, and it's really hard to predict, when we might have a bad batch in the local community without looking at those overdose deaths, because data that's more confirmatory, like from the medical examiner testing people after they've unfortunately passed away, or testing at kind of point of care for some of those newer substances on the market like xylazine, that's really difficult to do, and we don't necessarily have the resources available to get that sort of confirmatory answer about what's in this bad batch today.
Talking about reducing fatal drug overdoses with Rachel Gicule, who is an epidemiologist at UW-Madison and its School of Nursing. You can join in with your questions, your comments along the way. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. Are these overdose spike alerts reaching the people who need them most, Rachel?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? I will say I've been really encouraged that in Wisconsin and really nationwide, but in Wisconsin especially, we've seen some of the opioid settlement funds go to increasing the capacity of these sort of spike alert systems at the local level. And the opioid settlement funds, what I'm speaking of there is the more than $400 million that the state has gotten from settling with lawsuits related to drugs like prescription drugs like oxycodone. But yeah, so now we are seeing some investment in those systems that I think will result in meaningful evaluation. But unfortunately, they're a little bit too new and sort of implemented differently throughout the country that we don't have that super clear answer yet about whether people are able to change their behavior. I will say some of the early data suggests that people do find this information helpful, but they need to be able to have the resources to act on that behavior change. So, for example, when I spoke earlier about xylazine being a potential new contaminant in the drug supply, there are xylazine test strips out there, but we don't have them available locally yet through places like our certain service programs or the public health department. We do give out fentanyl test strips, and those are wonderful, but I think we're still sort of connecting the dots between we have a spike and then we have all needed resources for someone to really make that behavior change to maybe use a drug slower or test their drugs for a novel substance.
A follow-up there, though. Are fentanyl testing strips available enough? Are they having an impact on the problem?
Yeah, well, I think again, kind of going back to the opioid settlement funds, the state has made some more resources available to purchase those and to distribute them for free through our harm reduction programs and through public health. We know that people, especially several years ago when illicitly manufactured fentanyl was newly contaminating the heroin supply, could find that information helpful. And really, at an individual level, we're talking about, the person making a decision to maybe do like a test dose first before they use the full amount of a drug they've purchased, or to just use slower, to not use alone when they detect fentanyl. But now that illicitly manufactured fentanyl is really widely spread through the opioid supply, it's, I think it becomes less valuable information for those people who are intentionally using an opioid. But we are also seeing illicitly manufactured fentanyl contaminate the stimulant supply in Wisconsin and nationwide. And so I think they can be very helpful, especially for people who are not trying to use an opioid, but maybe being exposed to illicitly manufactured fentanyl through this sort of drug supply contamination.
UW-Madison Assistant Professor of Nursing Rachel Gicule researches substance use, researches drug overdose prevention and harm reduction. Join in at any point in the conversation. Call in with a question, your comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Drug overdose deaths are preventable. We learn about the latest efforts in Wisconsin for harm reduction and access to naloxone. That's the life-saving medication that can reverse an overdose from opioids. There's space to talk. Call in with your question. You can share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have epidemiologist Rachel Gicule, who is here. Rachel, let's talk about Narcan, the nasal spray version of naloxone that blocks an opioid's effects on the brain and reverses an overdose. There was the initiative launched last year in Milwaukee providing first responders with harm reduction materials, the kit that included naloxone. What challenges do cities face when funding harm reduction initiatives?
Many, but I will say, I think as our overdose crisis has gone on, naloxone or Narcan especially has become more and more of an accepted tool that is handed out by public health departments and others. The program that you were speaking out is kind of a leave behind program where people who experience an overdose or, you know, their social networks are often left with Narcan after that event. And so in places like Milwaukee and other areas around the state, I think it's a great initiative to make sure that people have access to that, perhaps with another overdose that they witness or experience themselves. We know that having an overdose is one of the strongest predictors of having a subsequent overdose. And so it's really important to reach people who use drugs who have experienced an overdose recently through initiatives like you were talking about in Milwaukee.
We've also seen installations of Narcan vending machines, you know, stocked with free Narcan and fentanyl test strips, you know, vending machines going in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country. What about this movement? What do you see there?
I think this is also an amazing initiative, again, that's in part made possible by the opioid settlement funds that have come into the state over the last year or so. These, one thing I really like about the vending machines is that they can offer anonymity. So you can go to the vending machine. You don't have to go to a provider and say, you know, I need some Narcan. And they're often put in very accessible places so that in some cases, even if someone were to witness an overdose, they could quickly get to the vending machine, get that naloxone or Narcan that they need and bring it back to the scene. With fentanyl, we see that people are overdosing a lot more quickly than they had been on heroin in past years before the drug supply had changed. So having that really quick access is actually super important. And again, having the opportunity to get Narcan without having to really say anything about yourself, about your need for Narcan, about your drug use, or who you're getting the Narcan for is really important for reducing stigma and shame around that.
And then the development earlier this year with the FDA approving Narcan as an over-the-counter medication, how accessible is it to people who are at higher risk of overdose?
Yeah, I think that's going to be something we need to carefully monitor as Narcan really starts to become available in pharmacies. From what I've seen so far, Narcan was approved for over-the-counter distribution in March by the FDA. We're still sort of waiting to see that it will become available in the final price, but it's anticipated to be around $50, which really could be pretty cost prohibitive for some of the community that uses drugs. And so I think, you know, over-the-counter Narcan is great, and that was such a positive development, I think, especially for normalizing having Narcan and sort of trying to change the narrative around thinking about it as this specialized medication. It's very safe. And so I think providing it over the counter makes it more like a Tylenol or an ibuprofen or something like that. However, that doesn't mean we can stop distributing Narcan or naloxone in places that people use drugs access now and where they can access it for free. So there I'm speaking about places like syringe service programs, which offer Narcan and training on how to use it, as well as many other wonderful services in a stigma-free environment. I think those are the programs that we need to keep going alongside this approval of over-the-counter Narcan.
Okay, so watching that price point, ensuring that it's affordable is something that you have your eye on there in the over-the-counter market aspect. You mentioned syringe service programs. How effective are they?
Very effective. Syringe services programs are really one of the least, they're meant to be one of the least stigmatizing spaces for people who use drugs, a place that really embodies kind of the ideals of harm reduction and meeting people where they're at, where someone can really go and access the services they may need to make sure that their drug use is as safe as possible. So beyond just accessing naloxone, they can get other safer drug use equipment like syringes, like fentanyl test strips. They also can get testing for infectious diseases like HIV and hepatitis C, wound care, and then very importantly, referrals to things like addiction treatment, mental health care, other social services like housing referrals. So through this sort of bundled set of services, they are actually highly effective in reducing mortality and helping people to lead a safer life while they're using drugs and afterwards if they decide to stop using drugs later on.
Rachel Gicule, an epidemiologist at UW-Madison, as we talk about reducing fatal drug overdoses and harm reduction strategies, you can still join in at 800-642-1234. Call in with a question, share your thoughts as well. Rachel, you mentioned stigma. How does stigma contribute to overdose risk?
In many, many ways. One framing that I like from the literature is that stigma is a fundamental cause of population health inequities. And so, as applied to overdose, what that really means is that stigma finds many, many pathways to impact the ultimate outcome of overdose through every effort that we may try. So treatment, it affects people whether they feel comfortable enrolling in treatment, whether they feel comfortable walking in the door of a syringe service program, whether they're willing to call 911 to get extra help when they witness an overdose. And so, stigma is really one of those pervasive risk factors. And the idea of a fundamental cause is that without addressing that fundamental cause of stigma, we will never actually fully address, an outcome like overdose mortality through the various programs that we devise. We really have to address that root cause of stigma to actually see the full improvement that we're trying to get. So I think a lot of the efforts to reduce the stigma of drug use are really key to realizing this goal of reducing overdose mortality.
And this can happen at the individual level. One person can make a change. I mean, what is the impact of using non-judgmental and supportive words and eliminating stigmatizing language from your own, from your own conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. We know in some of the literature, especially around healthcare interactions, that using a term like substance use disorder instead of substance abuse or substance abuser, that we see that clinicians perceive, less judgment around someone with a substance use disorder. And I think syringe services programs in their provision of non-judgmental, non-stigmatizing care really embody this idea that when you do that, people feel comfortable asking questions. They feel comfortable sticking around to get their training to use Narcan. And these really do have positive effects on overdose mortality.
We have very limited time left, but it is the year of mental health, the governor proclaimed. What could Wisconsin do in its next 2-year state budget to really prevent overdose deaths? What is a positive step that our state could take?
Yeah, I think I'll list two briefly. One is I think strengthening our Good Samaritan law to which protects people who witness an overdose from legal ramifications from calling 911, really trying to also offer protections to the person who overdosed themselves. And then also I think continuing to invest in harm reduction venues like overdose prevention centers would be an amazing harm reduction step for the state.
Rachel, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Rachel Gicule is an epidemiologist and an assistant professor at UW-Madison School of Nursing. Recovery from addiction is possible. For help, please call the free and confidential treatment referral hotline. It's 800-662-HELP. That's 800-662-HELP. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.